Aggressive, dominant, excellent, adult onset, prenatal, infertility, pediatrics, cancer, cardiac, neuro. Welcome to Gene Therapy with Nick Charles.
Hello, and welcome back to Gene Therapy with Nick Charles. I'm Nick Charles, and girl, we are going through it. We are living through some unprecedented times right now. So here we are in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. I prefer to refer to this virus as Miss Corona. In gay terms, I would say, Miss Corona, who is she? We have a couple friends who have been confirmed as having it. Luckily, we are blessed with friends that are getting through this. They can't really smell or taste anything, but they are through the period of not being able to breathe very well and having a really gross cough. And myself and my husband, Arthur, are just really concentrating on not killing each other during this self-quarantine. And when we do have to go out to food shop or things like that, just, you know, not having a full-blown panic attack about it, coming home, Lysoling and showering and washing and then moving on with our lives. And unfortunately, during this time of March, end of March, beginning of April, I was born. My birthday is March 29th. So I don't know if I'll be posting this on my birthday or a little bit after my birthday, but anywho, I guess happy birthday to me. I will be 32. And I will be celebrating my birthday in quarantine. I plan on baking myself a cake in the shape of a French bulldog, thanks to a baking pan that my husband bought me for Christmas last year. I plan on watching lots of random things on Disney Plus and playing some video games. And fingers crossed, hopefully getting some pizza delivered, because pizza is my favorite food. And I will not deny myself that if I don't have to. But anywho, welcome to episode 2. I will say that I am very excited from the feedback that I've been getting thus far, even after just one episode. And a lot of the feedback has been surrounding topics having to do with I am an undergrad student or somebody who is ready for a change in life. How do I go about becoming a genetic counselor? Well, bad news is that is not the topic of this episode, but good news is next episode, I will have my first very special guest. I'm going to have one of my favorite humans in the world on. Her name is Casey Marks, and she is currently a second year genetic counseling grad student. So hopefully we can get some really great information and also some really tips and pointers from her about how to apply for grad school, what will look good on a resume, what will prepare you the best, how to survive as a grad student in one of these programs currently, because mama knows that as much as I am still pretty fresh out of the gate, 7 years is a long time. So I'm sure that the landscape has changed very much since I was a student. But, you know, we'll both give you some advice and our own personal experiences, and hopefully that will answer a lot of the questions I've been getting. But, you know, as I've told people, if there's still more questions that are very specific to your situation, or we just didn't touch upon something that you wanted me to, by all means, slide into my DMs on Instagram at GeneTherapyPod, or email me GeneTherapyPod@gmail.com. Goodness, I almost had a moment of muscle memory there and said Copy Laters Die First, which is my first podcast that I host with my really amazing, great friend forever, Ashley. So, hey, Ashley, I don't know if you're listening, but hi. So anyway, I'm going a little crazy. I'm being a little extra. But as I said, episode 3, How to Become a Genetic Counselor, with my really great friend, Casey Marks, as our first special guest. Hopefully that'll be where we get a nice meaty sandwich for a lot of you out there that you can sink your teeth into. But for episode 2, I thought we would just talk in a little bit more general terms again. We discussed what a genetic counselor is last week during episode 1. So I thought in this episode, we'll talk about what does a genetic counselor do specifically. And I thought the best way to go about this would be to go area by area in terms of specialty where we see the most genetic counselors practicing. And just really getting a good sense of what specific things would a genetic counselor do for you if you were going to see one in one of these specific areas of medicine. You know, how would they fit into your care team? And just really, you know, make this the end of our genetic counseling primer so we can move on to more specific topics. And I'm certainly excited for that, genuinely. So anyway, I think that's all there is for this intro for episode 2. But yeah, sorry if I seem a little bit crazier than usual, but we haven't left the house in like 5 days. And yesterday was the first time we went out to go food shopping. And we live in New York City. And Lord, it was like a post-apocalyptic hellscape. There was like nothing on the shelves. Everyone was wearing masks and gloves, but at the same time were taking their mask off to smell produce. And then when they didn't want it, they just put it back. So it was like, if you have COVID, you just gave it to somebody else who is going to buy that fennel of that bulb of fennel that you just put back. And like, nothing made sense. The world is on fire. It's a dumpster fire a little bit. And hopefully things will get back to normal soon. So anyway, what does a genetic counselor do? So as I've mentioned before, genetic counselors can work in one of many different specialties. And at the end of the day, it really comes down to what they're passionate about in terms of where they, you know, find themselves working. And as I've mentioned, prenatal infertility and artificial reproductive technology are all really my jam. I love helping people make babies. Oh my goodness. Already. Cuckoo crazy. Lala. Take 2. So, as I've mentioned previously, genetic counselors can work in one of many specialties. And at the end of the day, where they work really depends on where their passions lie. As I have said previously, I really love prenatal and infertility and artificial reproductive technologies. And that's ultimately where I see myself working for the rest of my career. And I just really love helping couples family plan and helping them have the, you know, healthy children that they want. All right, we did it this time. Woohoo! So in terms of what genetic counselors do, we're going to go specialty by specialty. And the list of specialties that we're going to run through today include prenatal and preconception counseling, cancer counseling, pediatrics and adult clinic counseling, cardiac counseling, neurology counseling, and then artificial reproductive technologies and fertility. And then it would be remiss if we did not touch upon specialty clinics, newborn screening or other government programs, research settings, and also industry. So we are going to start with prenatal and preconception. This is where I started my career and ultimately where the career of genetic counseling started in general. In terms of what a prenatal or preconception genetic counselor does on a daily basis, that can definitely differ. But overall, the patients coming to a prenatal counselor are there because they have either a family history of a disease and they would like to avoid having that disease in their children, or they themselves are infected with a disease and they would like to avoid passing that on to a child, or they have a, you know, unfortunate pregnancy history. Perhaps they've had a hard time conceiving, or any of that, but they're not currently pregnant. They are thinking about pregnancy and want to do as much as possible prior to getting pregnant to ensure they're going to have the best chance of having a healthy pregnancy and ultimately a healthy baby. And, you know, your patient is ideally not pregnant in that scenario. But most of the time you are speaking with pregnant women. And this counselor would be in a team that may have, you know, ultrasonographers, OBGYNs, potentially a maternal fetal medicine doctor, as well as the nurses and all of the clinic staff that help you out in one way or another. And ultimately, that patient would be mainly seeing the OBGYN for their prenatal care, but their OBGYN would give them a reference to a genetic counselor if there's any questions about genetics or prenatal screening or things like that, that would be better handled by us and not by the OBGYN potentially. Or, you know, they are an OBGYN or maternal fetal medicine doctor that is up and up on all this stuff, but they just want to make sure that, you know, they get the best care possible for all their patients. So anywho, you might be coming to see a prenatal counselor for something really super easy in and out, and you're just having some type of prenatal screening. You might be having first trimester screening. You might be having NIPT or non-invasive prenatal screening. But one way or another, you're having some type of screening test, potentially involving an ultrasound, where we're looking at the risk for chromosome abnormalities such as Down syndrome in an ongoing pregnancy. You may also see a genetic counselor after an ultrasound at any point in the pregnancy if there's any hint of there being a sex discrepancy based on some testing, or there's some type of ultrasound abnormality that might be indicative of one genetic condition or another. And this conversation you're going to have is going to be about what does this potentially mean for the pregnancy and the fetus? Are we looking at anything special for delivery? Are we looking at a situation where this baby might not make it to a full term pregnancy? Might we be seeing a fetal demise? Those are, of course, the darker things. But then also, based on whatever you're coming in for, whatever finding, whatever testing, we're talking about that test. What does this test involve? What are we looking at? What are the genetic etiologies of X, Y, or Z that we're looking at? And what are your testing options? We'll be going through all of the testing options in a good amount of detail so that you, the patient, understand what is involved, what type of sample we're taking, what we're looking at, what results might mean. And then we'll also likely be taking a family history to make sure that we're not missing anything else that might be there within your family that we could also be looking at if you would want to, either through risk assessment or some other type of testing. And that may, you know, be carrier screening if you haven't had it yet, where we're looking for those recessive disorders. where both you and a partner have to be a carrier for that disease for a 25% chance of there being an affected pregnancy, or something dominant like the BRCA1 or 2 genes, where there's an increased risk for cancer. And we'll touch more upon that stuff when we talk about cancer counseling. But really, at the end of the day, your prenatal counselor is your number one go-to for ultimately risk assessment here. What are the chances of chromosome abnormalities affecting one of your pregnancies based on your age, based on your pregnancy history, based on your chromosomes? What are the chances of there being inheritable disease, whether it be recessive or dominant or X-linked, like Fragile X syndrome, for example, based on your family history, based on any type of carrier screening that you have? And if you haven't had carrier screening, do you want that? We can order it for you, blah, 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 blah. Basically, at the end of the day, a prenatal session is based on your medical history, based on your pregnancy history, based on your family history. These are all the options we have for assessing risk and asking you, the patient, once we arm you with all this information, what, if anything, do you want to do? What testing do you want to have coordinated? And then after those results come back, you would discuss those results with your prenatal genetic counselor and really talk about, okay, this is negative or this is positive. What does that mean? If it's negative, how small are the chances of X, Y, or Z actually happening in a pregnancy now? If it's positive, what exactly is the chance of this condition or that condition actually affecting my pregnancy? Do we want to do some type of diagnostic testing, talking about amniocentesis or CVS, depending upon how far along you are in a pregnancy, the risks and limitations of diagnostic testing? And again, if you have one of those tests, when the results come back, discussing those with the counselor, what does this mean for your baby? What disease does this baby have? And then, you know, ultimately talking about, are you committed to having this baby? Then, you know, what things should we have in place for early intervention and best quality of life once the baby's born? Or is this something that you would consider terminating a pregnancy for? You know, where are you in the timeline of the pregnancy? Is termination even an option? All of that type of stuff. So certainly all over the place, you could be coming in for a very simple test, or you could be coming in for something a little bit more heavy and dark. But ultimately, the genetic counselor is really going to take your hand and guide you through all of this, because Lord knows pregnancy is already scary and crazy enough because of hormones and all of the, you know, different terms being thrown at you, and you're having all these blood samples drawn. Where is this tube going? Where is that tube going? You're having ultrasounds, you're having this, that, and the other thing, screening you for, you know, gestational diabetes, screening you for this, how's your blood pressure, blah, 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 blah. That's a lot to, you know, have a grasp on and to keep track of. So the genetic counselor, as a part of your larger medical team during pregnancy, will make sure that you understand and are on top of all of the genetic risks and making sure that we've assessed all of those to the best of our ability, or, you know, have gone as far as you want to, since, you know, this is your thing that's going on. So that's prenatal. The other thing I want to mention is that we will definitely have more in-depth, episodes. keep it together, Nick. Episodes on each of these specialties, and really almost going through a mock counseling session for all those specialties. And now certainly it'll be the easiest for me as a prenatal counselor to do the prenatal mock session, but I'll make sure that all the information is good for each of our episodes for each of the specialties. And maybe we'll have special guests, classmates of mine or colleagues of mine that have worked in specific areas, so they can give you the full 411 on all the things. So that's prenatal. Next is cancer. Now, with cancer counseling, one way or another, you are going to an oncology center typically. The genetic counselor, in terms of being a part of your medical team, is working with an oncologist. It might be your oncologist or a family member's oncologist. And again, the nursing staff, anyone in charge of your treatments, all of the staffing for the actual clinic, et cetera. And coming into a cancer session, if you are the individual who has been diagnosed with cancer, it might be more about, all right, you have XYZ cancer, based on your age, based on guidelines, looking at what's going on with you. We wanted you to come see a genetic counselor to see if your cancer is due to a genetic predisposition. And if so, also discussing getting screening for whatever familial mutation that we find in a cancer gene for your other direct family members to make sure that if they also carry it, that they can then enact a more aggressive plan for cancer screening so that, you know, if and or when they get cancer, they can be up on it and catch it early, or, you know, hopefully, you know, never catch it, but just be screening more aggressively because of this increased risk they would have with a, excuse me, specific genetic predisposition. And when we're talking about, oh my goodness, excuse me again. I was eating hamburger, eating Hamburger Helper before. And it seems I got a little piece of macaroni stuck in my throat. Let me take a sip of my water. Okay, I think that is better. Sorry about that. Back to cancer counseling. So this is highly dependent upon what type of cancer that we're talking about, but there's certainly genes that are more, well known to the general population, like the BRCA1 and 2 genes that can predispose to breast and ovarian cancer. There's also a whole slew of genes that can cause something called Lynch syndrome, which is a hereditary predisposition to colon cancer. There's conditions that can predispose to thyroid cancer or other cancers of, you know, those hormone secreting organs. And there can also be genes that predispose to basically all over body cancer, soft tissue cancers, and things like that. Most of the time, blood cancers and bone cancers are sporadic, but I am certainly not a expert on the genetics of cancer. I certainly know a bit. And I know that cancer counseling has in the last couple of years certainly changed a lot in terms of what it looks like. That's really mainly because, not that we've discovered all these new genes per se that can predispose to cancer, but ultimately the testing rationales have changed because testing costs have gone down and it's a lot easier to screen someone when we don't necessarily know exactly what gene is going on in a family, not just stepwise gene by gene, but doing a full gene panel now for cancer predisposition syndromes, for appropriate cancers based on your family history. And ultimately, we want to see, you know, for the patient who has cancer, if there is a predisposition gene that you have a mutation in, is that going to change your treatment at all? Will it change the drugs that you're taking? Will it change the actual way that we're attacking the cancer? Are there specific hormones that the cancer will or will not respond to? If you don't have cancer, you're probably coming in because there's a family history of cancer and somebody in your family either had cancer very early on in life and it was aggressive, there may be a rare cancer in the family, like ovarian cancer. Or, you know, there's somebody who had cancer, had gene testing, and was found to have a mutation that's in your family, and you're coming in to get screened for that mutation as well to see if you inherited it and would also have a, you know, predisposition to cancer. So in my mind, you know, as I mentioned in episode one, I feel like cancer counseling is a little bit more heavy. We're talking about really direct issues that are going to be greatly impacting the person in front of you's medical management potentially. You know, it might just be because I have a large family history of cancer, and a lot of my family members have had it, or I've seen a lot of family members have parents that have had it and are very scared of going for screening themselves. But, you know, just not for me, each to their own. So ultimately, with cancer counseling, it's more so about treatment and prevention and making sure that for whoever is sitting across from the counselor, and all those other first-degree family members that may also be impacted, that we're getting testing for the cancer genes, we're finding out if predispositions are there, we're seeing how it's going to potentially change treatment or screening for individuals who are found to have mutations but haven't had cancer yet. And typically with cancer counseling, you can end up creating a, you know, long-term relationship with your counselor, because you may be coming in with other family members for them to get screening if a mutation is found, and you'll see them throughout your treatments because they work in the same center that you're coming into. And that's certainly a great thing, to have a familiar face. And again, you know, they would talk with you when discussing testing about what are we doing, how are we doing it, what could it possibly find. And then once results are out, if you do testing, what did we find? What didn't we find? What does this mean? And at the end of the day, you know, if there's someone in your family with cancer, even if, you know, this giant panel of predisposition genes is negative, you're still going to have an increased risk above the general population for cancer, just based on the fact that you had a family member with cancer. So it's still important to talk about these risks, talk about what they might mean, and really arm yourself with that information, because obviously cancer is unfortunately no joke. And it's definitely something to keep an eye on if you need to. So that is cancer counseling. And speaking of, you know, creating a long-lasting relationship with a patient, I really feel like this next specialty is where you can really have a long-term relationship with patients, and that's in pediatrics and adult centers and clinics. So really short story, when I was a student, I knew I wasn't going to like pediatrics because I don't, especially at that time, know how to interact with children. I'm one of those people that talk to everybody the same way. And, you know, babies are cute, but like, I don't know how to interact with one. And, you know, children under the age of like 15, like, what are you? How do we find common ground? I don't know. So I was scared going in, but I ended up having two really great supervisors for my rotation. And they worked with a really amazing medical geneticist. And through working with them, I really super enjoyed and was able to understand the benefits of pediatric and adult genetic counseling. And I don't think I would, you know, seek out a position in that specialty at this point in my life, but I definitely had a fantastic experience and could see how somebody could be so super passionate about working in an environment like that. So with pediatrics and adults and working in clinics for individuals with specific diseases or like, you know, general clinics. Basically, number one, you're not typically working alone in the room with the patient like you would be in a cancer setting or prenatal setting per se. You're usually in the room with another medical professional. In this case, it is a medical geneticist who is a doctor and then specialized in medical genetics. And they really know their stuff. They know dysmorphology. They know all the things about metabolic conditions and different conditions that show, you know, different physical signs in individuals, things like Marfan syndrome, neurofibromatosis, all the metabolic conditions that I really don't like because metabolic genetics was my least favorite thing. But, you know, things like PKU and what's another more common one? I don't know. MCAD deficiency or things like that, where ultimately at the end of the day, we have one of two things. We have a child who is coming in because throughout their growth with their pediatrician, they're seeing a dip in physical growth or mental development, whether that be no speech, whether that be a concern for an intellectual disability, things like that. Looking at the child as they're growing and developing, there being specific morphologies within their physical self, like different mouth shapes, different eye shapes, specific markings on the body, early stretch marks for children, really long fingers, being super tall for their age, things like that, where there's a concern of a specific genetic condition that will impact this person's health. So their pediatrician is going to give them a referral to a medical geneticist who works in this clinic and the genetic counselor that they work with. And this is going to be far more like a physical than other types of genetic counseling, which are more like consultations. They're going to do a full body scan going, you know, body part by body part. Do we see flat feet? Do we see stretch marks? Do we see nodes of any types? You know, birthmarks, are the eyes farther apart than usual? Is the hair wiry? All these things. They're going to look at all the body parts to make sure what's going on, you know, question mark, let's tick all these boxes. And then based on what their referral is, you know, to rule out Marfan syndrome, let's say, they'll go through all of the physical signs that we know are indicative of Marfan syndrome. And if there's enough there in that list that you check yes for, then they're likely going to talk to you about doing diagnostic testing for that condition to confirm or rule out that diagnosis for you. Same thing with any condition that you're going in for. Same thing, let's say a pediatrician refers a newborn and their mom to a medical geneticist to rule out Down syndrome because they felt like this baby's face looks like, they have Down syndrome based on the morphology of the baby. Same thing there. If there, you know, is enough to potentially say, all right, maybe this baby does have Down syndrome, ordering a karyotype and looking at the chromosomes. So it's far more like being a genetics nurse, if you will. And being a genetic nurse is in itself an actual thing. It's like a historical career. Not so much here in the US, but in Europe. But when I say genetics nurse, I mean, you are really working in tandem with the medical geneticist. They are doing the, you know, actual evaluations and checkups and physical exams, but you are really there taking notes for them. And then it'll be, you know, left to you to take the mic and then do all the discussions about the testing and genetics when that stuff comes up. And then you'll be talking with the genetic counselor more directly and not just the medical geneticist about that. And working with the medical geneticist and the genetic counselor first time around, obviously we want to get a diagnosis if we can. And then if we have a diagnosis, what does that mean long term? What treatments do we put this child on? Blah, 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 blah. And in today's day and age, this really kind of translates into, you know, the pediatrics part, but then the adult part as well, because as technology gets better, as treatments get better overall, quality of life goes up for individuals with specific genetic conditions that in yesteryears might have meant you were passing away in your teens, your 20s, your 30s. And we're seeing people now with things like neurofibromatosis or cystic fibrosis or other more significant conditions like a slew of metabolic diseases that we'll have to unfortunately talk about at some point, much to my chagrin, that are living beyond the typical estimates of age. And now they might be getting into their adulthood. And if it's a condition where they're healthy enough to have their own children, they're finding partners and then coming back and saying, hey, you know, we're thinking of having children, but we want to avoid our child having this condition that I have. And then that's when the medical geneticist and pediatric genetic counselor would refer that patient to a prenatal counselor to talk about all the things that they can in a preconception consult. And that can lead to, in vitro fertilization and artificial reproductive technologies. So we all do work with each other in some sense or another. But ultimately, we just want to make sure that everybody's having the best life possible throughout every part of their life. And I think in pediatrics, that's where you see that part the most, because you are having a long-term relationship with these individuals as they grow into their own person, not just coming as a child with their parents and stuff like that. So that is pediatrics. We've made it through three of the specialties. I think it is now time for a break to hear a word from our sponsor. Okay, and we are back. So now that we've gone through prenatal and preconception and cancer counseling and pediatric and adult center counseling, ultimately you kind of get the gist of all of the main places that a genetic counselor can fit into within a healthcare team. Now, really, the other specialties that we're going to be talking about are kind of newer in the grand scheme of genetic counseling. The ones that we've already talked about are the things that have been very longstanding. And with these newer specialties, ultimately, the same gist, really, right? We want to make sure that patients are healthy and live the best life possible, give them the best treatment, and make sure other family members are getting testing to see if they also have a predisposition to or actually have a condition that is found in a first-degree relative. And just make sure that the patient and the family are getting all of the medical care they need to take care of whatever condition that we're talking about. So we're going to start with cardiac counseling here. Now, I do have a coworker who previously worked specifically in a cardiac center. So when we do have our longer episode about cardiac genetic counseling, I would love to have her on. We'll see if we can do that. But there are a group of genetic conditions that either predispose to cardiac problems or cause cardiac problems themselves due to mutations in specific genes that either cause physical or electrical pulse problems with the heartbeat. And a good example would be like long QT syndrome. That would be one of those electrical problems where a part of the electrical heartbeat that keeps our heart going rhythmically has the tendency under stressors of certain types to elongate and ultimately like kind of soft stop. And your heart would need like a reset, like a computer, if that were to happen. So if somebody gets scared or too stressed, whether that be mentally or physically, like through exercise or a jump scare or things like that, people with long QT could just have their heart stop because of that elongated part of the heartbeat. And then there's also physical problems like hypertrophic disease, let's just say it like that, where one of the ventricles of the heart can actually, like, the muscle itself can grow too thick, and that can be a condition in itself or part of a larger condition. In this case, we're typically talking about just the cardiac condition itself, where a part of the heart muscle grows too thick. And that can just kind of impede the heart beating well and getting blood to where it needs to go to. And that, like any other type of weight-related heart problem or, you know, hormone-related heart problem, things like that, it's going to have attacks on a person's health and potentially predisposed to cardiac arrest. So with these conditions, they're typically dominant. Some of them can also be recessive and inheritance. But once we have somebody found to have the condition, we're going to want to bring that person's family in. And once we have that diagnosis genetically in one person, we're then going to want to test all their first degree relatives, their parents, their children, their siblings, for that condition as well, to see if anybody else has that issue. And then it's a matter of what is treatment here? What is, just proactive healthcare treatment for these conditions? Some people have pacemakers implanted if they have an electrical condition like long QT. If it's something beyond that, it's a lot more monitoring, making sure they're staying healthy through diet and things like that. Beyond that, I will say and be honest that I don't have much of a knowledge beyond that for this topic specifically, but that's the good gist of it. And I would certainly like to get somebody who works in this specific type of genetic counseling to come on and talk in more detail, the nitty-gritty about all that. But cardiac genetic counseling, we're talking about genetic diseases of the heart. With neuro or neurology genetic counseling, same thing. We are talking about genetic conditions of the nervous system, more specifically the brain, and the brain, controls everything. So again, a neurology genetic counselor is going to work as a part of your medical team, working with your doctor. Specifically here would be a neurologist, for cardiac would be a cardiologist. And when there is a suspicion of there being, early diagnosis of a condition, like let's say Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or Huntington's disease, something along those lines, a disease of the brain that we can actually, know how it happens and it has a genetic etiology, going to that family, diagnosing that patient, and then trying to proactively diagnose anybody else who is also at a predisposition. Again, a lot of these neurologic conditions are dominant, but some of them are also recessive. There's not any specific X-linked disease that I can think of off the top of my head, but I'm sure there is one, because in genetics, you can know a lot and still know only a little. Another good way to think about it is when a doctor hears the sounds of hooves, they're expecting to see a horse walk into the room. And in genetics, we're expecting for a zebra to walk into the room because we look for the rare things. And Lord knows there are a lot of rare things, and it's hard to keep a track of everything. You know what I mean? Especially when you don't work in that specialty. But essentially, with neurology, very similar to a lot of these other specialties where there would be a family history of one of these conditions, you would come in and discuss this, whether it be that you're, you know, affected yourself or you have a parent affected. In the case of neurology, it's usually that there is a parent who's affected. You know, as they age, they have symptoms of this condition. And one way or another, it's suspected to potentially be genetic one way or another. And some type of genetic testing is done, mutations are found, and now it's a matter of testing other family members, talking about predispositions, if they have the mutation or mutations, and what does that mean for them? You know, what are they going to be expecting? What treatment should they start on? What screening should they start on? But, you know, I will say with some of these conditions, it's probably a lot harder to talk about than other topics, because really ultimately, a lot of times you may feel like as the patient, you are kind of signing a death warrant in a way. You know, you are finding out that you have the predisposition to this condition that is going to affect your brain. It can affect your memory, it can affect your thoughts, it can affect your mannerisms, the way you see the world. It can really change everything about you. And then you may also be losing, you know, function of muscle, being able to control your hands, your limbs, things like that. It can certainly be really scary. So again, we'll talk about that more in detail when we get there. But that's really neurology. The last main specialty I wanted to talk about was artificial reproductive technologies, or ART, and infertility. That's the space that I work in currently. So I actually just want to briefly touch upon some other things before we go there, because the things that I do know about, I could talk about for a long time. There are some other, you know, a little less common, but certainly still very notable places that you can find genetic counselors, specialty clinics for one. And when I'm talking about specialty clinics, this may be directly related to working in pediatrics and adult settings, but there are specific diseases that, you know, have their own specific clinics in different parts of the world, the country, etc. There might be a cystic fibrosis clinic at a hospital. There might be, you know, a clinic for a specific metabolic condition at a hospital where there are all the specialists for that condition. And that's where someone with X, Y, or Z condition should go for all of the best opinions, all of the best care, all the best treatment. And there are some genetic counselors who just bond so specifically with a specific disease or a specific set of diseases that, you know, that's their specialty. That's what they work in and day out. And those are the genetic counselors that you really do want to talk about a condition with when you have a question about it, because they're probably going to know things that, like, the lay person or the lay genetic counselor, if you will, that, you know, talks about a specific disease on a regular basis, but doesn't necessarily have hands-on experience with individuals who have that disease and their treatment, they're going to know a whole lot more about quality of life, treatment options, et cetera, et cetera. And those are some of the most fascinating conversations I've ever had at conferences or when we have special speakers and things like that. So I didn't want to not mention that because big props to them. Also, there can be counselors who work in government-funded programs. The most notable one, the easiest one to talk about, would be newborn screening. The vast majority of U.S. states have newborn screening programs where they typically take a heel prick from the baby and they put that blood on an absorbent card. And that blood gets tested for a whole bunch of genetic diseases that, based on severity, age of symptoms presenting, things like that, have been chosen to be a part of the screener because if treatment starts sooner than later, it's going to benefit that person or that newborn long term. So you'll see things like cystic fibrosis, sickle cell disease, some slew of metabolic conditions, conditions that can affect the immune system, SCID, all these conditions that can have a profound impact treatment-wise if they're started earlier than later. And that's really why newborn screening was started to begin with. And there's counselors who work in these state programs because they're likely the ones who are looking at the reports, making sure they look appropriate, making sure that results are accurate. Newborn screening is typically a mixture of looking at common mutations that cause diseases, as well as for metabolic things and some blood disorders, looking at the actual components of the blood, looking at certain levels in different groups of enzymes and things like that, that when they're too low, when certain things are too high in the blood, can point to specific diseases. And these counselors are also likely reaching out to patients, discussing things, at least on the high level basis. And then those individuals would get referred out to, those medical geneticists and those pediatric genetic counselors to have a full evaluation for their child to confirm or deny that disease in their children. And then a lot of counselors also work in research in terms of that type of setting. I certainly have a few friends that work specifically in research. And a lot of times what they're doing is consenting families to research. They're also collecting data for the actual study, and they're not necessarily doing counseling. Excuse you, my husband just walked in the room and turned on the sink like I wasn't doing anything important. I'll just wait. Thank you. You're gonna edit that out? No, I'm not going to edit it out. Everyone needs to know how rude you are. Do you hear, loyal listeners, how rude my husband is during this COVID lockdown? Anyway, I joke, I love him. But so research counselors, they're doing counseling a little bit differently. Not necessarily getting to the nitty-gritty of specific medical things, but they're helping the medical community at large by being a part of research. And it would also be remiss of me to not say that a good chunk of counselors who work in all these other specialties are also involved in research in general anyway. But for these much larger, large scale types of studies that may have, very profound impacts on the way certain things are done in the medical community, they will hire genetic counselors on for those types of studies. Anyhoosie. Finally, industry genetic counseling. This is something that has exploded in the last, 5 to 10 years. There's always been some proportion of genetic counselors who work for labs specifically. But with genetic testing exploding in many different ways, whether that be direct to consumer testing like 23andMe, carrier screening, NIPT, IVF, and pre-implantation genetic testing, or PGT, all types of genetic testing ultimately becoming more common and more readily available to not just doctors and patients, but anyone in the general public. These large genetic testing labs are more aggressively hiring on genetic counselors to be able to do telephone counseling, to help with the development of products and product materials, to work with the lab directly to answer questions for practitioners who want to order testing to make sure that they're ordering the most appropriate thing, being medical science liaisons that travel to actual clinics that use the products of a specific lab to do training, to do informational sessions, to teach them not just about the products, but also genetics as a whole. Genetic counselors are being hired as, product managers, all different types of possibilities out there in the industry, if you will. I do work in the industry. I don't only work in the ART and infertility space, but I work specifically for a lab that does pre-implantation genetic testing, or PGT, for embryos that have been created through IVF or in vitro fertilization for couples who either have fertility issues or have, family histories of specific diseases and want to avoid passing them on to their children, or have conditions themselves, blah, 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 blah. Going back to noticing patterns, do you notice the patterns now? Everything about us is genetic. So all the genetic counselors in the world ultimately are connected in one way or another. And that's profoundly beautiful, I would say. Pat on the back to me. Industry space, though, getting much, much larger. And there's a lot of new grads coming out of grad school that also want to be involved in the industry because it just seems shinier and like they'll have a better quality of life. And that's not necessarily untrue. Typically, as a whole, labs will pay more, give more benefits, give them work laptops, work phones, pay for travel, pay to go to educational conferences, and not just conferences where they might be working, selling products at a booth or things like that. So these are a lot of frustrations that a lot of clinical counselors can see, at least historically, in working in a hospital setting or a private practice setting or a clinic setting. And did I say clinic already? No, I said hospital. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so there's a little bit of, back and forth there, if you will, because we're seeing a lot more genetic counselors come straight out of school and go right into an industry position. And while it's great and good that there's plenty of jobs available right now because the genetic counseling market as a whole is booming, it is important to realize that clinical experience, and this is a soapbox that I'm getting on, hashtag soapbox, bear with me. It is really important to bear in mind that having some clinical experience under your belt really does help you in an industry position, because overall, oh, good Lord, I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, but my husband came into the room and bothered me again with something that could have waited until later. So needless to say, when I talked about earlier about us trying not to kill each other during self-quarantine, he is on thin ice right now. So anyway, back to my soapbox. I do feel like, and I feel as if a lot of genetic counselors who are not new grads would agree with me that it is really beneficial to have some clinical experience under your belt before going into an industry position. And ultimately, that is because when you start an industry position, you suddenly realize that you're really almost like an independent, worker out there in the universe a lot of times by yourself. And while it's great to be trusted by your supervisor and your company to be a good self-starter and to be self-sufficient and to be a solo problem solver, not everybody has those skills coming right out of school, especially when it comes to genetics. There's a lot of things to think about when trying to solve a problem, especially if we're talking about, helping a patient out with testing or diagnosing a patient with something. And those are just really valuable skills to have that a lot of people may not have coming right out of school. But also, more importantly, working in a clinical space, you learn what the most common questions and concerns that patients have surrounding certain topics. And you develop certain ways of discussing different topics, whether it be a certain test, a certain disease, where you can almost 100% guarantee that it'll be a knock out of the park of people understanding it well. And a lot of those skills, being able to effectively help patients, effectively discuss certain topics with patients, really translate well to an industry position, because ultimately you may be a lot of times working with the marketing team to develop educational programs, educational materials, the marketing materials for new or existing products, online videos, seminars, webinars, all these things. Not saying that, new grads coming out of school won't excel in industry positions. I have current and previous coworkers who came right out of school and went straight into an industry position, and they're fantastic and wonderful at what they do and responsible genetic counselors, and I'm proud to work with them. It's just something to think about if you are a genetic counseling student or thinking about becoming a genetic counselor. Most of the time, what we all got into this for starting off is helping patients out, being able to feel like we're making a difference in people's lives. And you don't get the same satisfaction out of that specific want or need when you're in an industry position. You get the rewards of that much more directly when you're working directly with patients in a clinic or a doctor's office or a hospital. That being said, working in an industry position, I certainly help patients on a daily basis, but just in less direct ways. Making sure that a report that is going out that day has all the information on it in a clear manner, so they're is an avoidance of questions and they'll just understand it the first time. Talking to patients about test results, talking to patients about, lab processes, all things like that. After being rudely interrupted for a second time by my husband, I think in covering that, the only thing we have left is really talking a little bit more about ART and infertility. And ultimately, this is where I work currently. A lot of people in a clinical space might work in a donation programs office, whether that be egg donor or sperm donor or both, an egg bank, a sperm bank, or in an IVF, in vitro fertilization center, a reproductive endocrinologist's office. Where people are coming in because either they are experiencing infertility and really want to have biological children, or, they want to pursue IVF and PGT or pre-implantation genetic testing to in short, to the best of their ability, they're going to have a child without X, Y, or Z condition that either somebody has, one of the patients has, there's a family history of, et cetera. Ultimately, in terms of what I do working at a lab, we're, you know, helping run the test. Well, that's not true. I'm not helping run the test, but I'm helping with reports, and my coworkers help with patients understanding the testing that they're getting themselves into, for lack of a better term. But that is really, you know, at the end of the day, what ART or artificial reproductive technology and infertility counseling is. We'll certainly have different testing topics and probably shorter episodes on those. But we'll do PGT, we'll do NIPT, first trimester screening, carrier screening, diagnostic testing, direct mutation testing, direct to consumer testing, and all that jazz. But ultimately, I think that's about it for today. I don't want to, drag this on for much longer. I know that we had a lot to talk about today, but that is the end of our genetic counseling primer. And as I mentioned earlier, next week we'll have my lovely friend Casey Marks on to talk about becoming a genetic counselor and what it's like to be a current genetic counseling student graduating soon. And I also feel like I should just cut myself off now before I further drop into insanity, because I am going a little bit mad during this quarantine, and I have to go yell at my husband for constantly interrupting me while he knows I'm recording a podcast. So that is that. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode on what a genetic counselor does, breaking it down specialty by specialty. If you do have any specific questions, concerns, etc. about anything discussed today, please let me know. Lord knows that I may have said something out of date. So if you have a correction for me, let me know. I'm certainly always up for a corrections corner as well, but I'll only take corrections from those that I know are really, up and up on it, aka other genetic counselors. JK, again, I should cut myself off now before I go even crazier. If you want to send me a message, a question, etc., you can slide into my DMs at GeneTherapyPod at Instagram. That is at GeneTherapyPod. You can also email me. The email address for this podcast is GeneTherapyPodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. Again, that is GeneTherapyPodcast at gmail.com. Or you can also send me a voice message, and maybe I will feature it on an episode. You can send me a voice message by using the link in the description for this episode. And I think that is all. So everybody, in these trying times, please stay safe. Please stay COVID-19 free. Stay hydrated, stay healthy, stay happy, and stay sane. So until next time, goodbye.
This has been Gene Therapy with Nick Charles. Please note that while I am a medical professional, any information discussed in this podcast does not constitute actionable medical advice. If you feel genetic counseling is appropriate for you, visit nsgc.org to find a genetic counselor practicing in your area. And don't forget to comment, rate, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Bye for now.